Good morning, everyone. It's 8:30, so I think we'll get started. Welcome to the Fall Faculty Staff Conference, what always feels to me something like a New Year's party, even though it comes at the end of a hot summer. We're all looking forward to the return of the students and a new academic year. For many of you, this really is a return. You've been out and about over the summer. Welcome back. For many of you, for many of us, this isn't a return. This is a pleasant break in an ongoing routine. But welcome to all of you as well. And I hope these days will be, today and tomorrow will be a day of refreshment and renewal. For those of you who are not returning, this is actually your second New Year's party. Faculty may not be aware of this, but on July 1, we have a New Year's bash at the turn of the fiscal year, where the president and Kirk Schisler usually give an update on how we're doing financially, and we have some punch and cookies and celebrate the new academic year. So for those of you who've been here all summer, welcome to your second New Year's Day party. I'm also aware that there are several people who would have liked to be here today who aren't for various kinds of health reasons, family issues. I'm particularly mindful of Walt Surratt, and I think we should all say a prayer for him. He's at Johns Hopkins right now undergoing a second round of chemotherapy for his leukemia, and I know our thoughts are with him. For those of you, I don't know how many of you have been watching his Caring Bridge page, but his attitude of optimism and good spirits through all of this has certainly been a challenge to me. And I know he actually mentioned this week that we were all going to be meeting and he was sorry he couldn't be here. So our thoughts go out to him. Our theme for the conference this year is creativity in the university. It's taken from a couple phrases, actually, in our mission statement. At one point in our mission statement, we say that we want to have students who are formed by experiences in artistic creation. We also say that we want our learning community to be marked by creative process. I think often in the university, we're tempted to think of creativity as something that we sort of turn over to the arts department or maybe the marketing department. Hopefully not the accounting department. But in fact, what I hope we'll do today is think about how creativity can have an impact on all of our lives, in all of our work, wherever we happen to be located in the university. In fact, if we sequester creativity in the arts departments, I think we impoverish our learning community. But to the extent that we all behave creatively, think creatively, act creatively, we enrich ourselves as a whole. So we're going to have a keynote speaker this year, whom I know some of you, many of you will recognize. Dave will introduce him a bit later, but he's somebody who's spent most of his adult life practicing and thinking about the creative arts. But for much of the rest of the session, we're actually going to be hearing from each other, both in a panel discussion here this morning, but then also in breakout sessions and workshops this afternoon that are being led by members of our own learning community from across the university, from across the usual faculty-staff divides, thinking about how creativity is operative in a whole variety of areas across the university. So I hope this combination of sessions you'll find thought-provoking, enriching, and refreshing as we head into the new year. I'd like to introduce now David King, our Director of Athletics, but for purposes of these fall faculty staff conferences going back I don't know how many years, our MC extraordinaire.
Good morning and welcome to what might be the 95th Faculty Staff Conference at Eastern Mennonite College/University. Now, whether that is accurate or not, it probably isn't really all that important, but I hope that it does serve as a reminder that we are closing in on 100 years. Will you be here? And it should also serve to remind us that while this particular gathering of people is unique in its own way, there are many, many people who have paved the way for us, who have been down the path that we are about to embark on for the 2012-2013 academic year at what is a wonderfully blessed institution. I'd like to take this opportunity to do a huge favor for someone in the audience. Now, I'm not sure exactly who you are, but if everyone will take out their cell phone, tablet, tabloid, Kindle, notebook, or any other electronic device and turn it off to silence mode or airplane mode if you prefer, I promise you, you will thank me later. Have you ever been in a group of this size? There's actually more commotion with everybody reaching for their cell phone to turn theirs off than the ode to joy that's blaring off somebody's cell phone. So let's get that out of the way, and then you can thank me later for the embarrassment and shades of red that are turned in certain rows about halfway through when the veterinarian calls said your dog is finished. Welcome to this unique gathering of persons dedicated to the purpose of walking alongside young people in their journey of life, at least for these four most exciting, challenging years of their life. Our gathering is unique in a variety of ways. We all come with different roles. We each come with certain expectations, or maybe you didn't come with any at all. And we bring our own experiences, past and present. Some of us come exhausted after weeks of hosting campus guests, cleaning rooms, and monitoring facilities. Some of us come refreshed from a sabbatical experience, and some come elated that they are starting their sabbatical. Oh, if you fit that category, please leave. Or you're permitted to leave, whichever. Okay. Sorry, I don't know how to put that in there. Some of us are glad to know that students are soon returning to bring life to the quiet offices, classrooms, and lounge areas that we have been experiencing. Some of us come invigorated after travel and study opportunities that will enhance our teaching. Some of us come ready to have a more normal rhythm to our day's work rather than the special projects, deep cleaning of offices, and major repairs and new construction that we have been responsible for. And some of us come with a bit of fear, wondering, what is this place and who are these people that I will be working with and will I fit in here? Some of us come excited about the new courses we will be teaching, the relationships we can continue to with students, and the possibilities that lie in front of us for the coming year. Some of us come having spent time with family, both nuclear and extended. Some of us come with pain from the death of a friend or a family. And some of us come with the joy of new life. I have a picture if you know. The first person that calls me grandpa has to leave. I'm not ready for that yet. Some of us come well rested from a time of vacation, and some of us come needing a rest from our vacation. But I hope that we all come with the joy of knowing that we have been called to this place and this time so that we can be a part of the wonderful work of building the kingdom of God on this earth, having been gifted and now been given the opportunity to use our gifts to shape the lives of young people, to help shape the future. It seems like almost daily I have a conversation with one of our coaches about team chemistry, exploring what each student athlete brings to the team, talking about ways to allow the unique attributes of each person to bring unity to the team rather than disharmony. And each time I am humbly reminded of how important each person, each player, each coach, and each spectator are to the success of the team. And as I look out over this particular group, I am overwhelmed with the amount of energy, talent, giftedness that each of you bring to this school year. I never thought of myself as a creative person until I met Ted Swartz. And then I knew I was really not a creative person. I was asked to teach handwriting in fifth grade at Locust Grove Mennonite School many years ago. Those of you who get memos from me that are not typed wonder what in the world was that principal thinking. But anyway, I have often linked creativity, as Fred has said, with the arts, writing, drawing, painting, and playing jazz music. Thankfully, I have broadened my understandings of creativity and the creative process. I am sure that you are well aware of your need to be creative with nearly every situation that you face and people that you interact with. And as the planning committee worked this year, we were astounded at the number of ways and places we had the opportunity to be creative, and we have the opportunity to instill that creativity and exploration in students, with the exception of the accounting department. They didn't offer to give one of those seminars. Now, maybe Daryl would like to do it here at year end. I'm not sure. We haven't heard that report yet. We do hope as a committee that whatever needs you brought with you will be met somehow, some way during these 2 days. It's a daunting task to prepare a program that will meet everyone's needs, but we trust the Holy Spirit to work through a song, a conversation, a skit, a workshop, a prayer, or a meal to minister to you in a way that will empower you for the work that you are about to embark on. We need everyone. We need each other. We all have something to bring to the table, and we hope that this conference will bring out the creativity in all of us as we try to develop that within the students that we work with, making this a better place. As has been our tradition the last several years in finding a way to appropriately introduce new people, we are going to do that. You have a list of those in your program, and I think these were sort of handed out late. Do you have the light blue program? You may have gotten the whatever color that is, worship experience, but I think these were handed out a little bit late. If you don't have a program, and I'll go over some of the details of that in just a moment. We will, again, technology is only as good as the people who put it together and the people who are running it. And then, of course, as I've always said, if you didn't show up at marketing, your face may not be up here. But we are hopeful everything will fit together well. So if you want to start, we will begin, once again, with remembering three persons from our community who passed away during this past year since last September. Paul T. Gimrich, and you can see his contributions to EMU. Ruth Lehman, May 1st, 2012. And Theo Yoder, April 12, 2012. Let's pause for a moment of silence and remembering the lives of these folks and how we have been empowered by them. Grant us your peace. Amen. And now for the new faculty and staff, in probably no particular order. Clivia Avila, Spanish language assistant. Lillian Barnhart, health center assistant. Sarah Bixler, associate residence director. Caroline Borden, lecturer intensive English program. Halson Prabhu Bose, assistant professor of nursing. Becky Brenneman, SIS project specialist. Adriana Rojas Campbell, instructor of Spanish. Diana Cruz from Colombia, Spanish language assistant. Sarah Defnall, residence director. Wendell Eberly, men's and women's golf coach. Timothy Emmerich, instructor of mathematics. David Evans, assistant professor of history, missions, and interfaith studies. Yvonne Fayardo, human resources assistant. Jonathan Freed, grounds worker. Sheldon Good, assistant director, Washington Community Scholars Center. Julia Halterman, assistant professor of biomedicine. Teresa Hartman, instructor, ADCP in Lancaster, RN to BS. Julie Hatfield, assistant to vice president of enrollment. Justin Hersey, user services support analyst. Judith Hyatt, instructor of nursing. Gwen Hill, admissions receptionist and daily campus visit coordinator. Les Horning, associate director of seminary development. Jessica Hostetler, project and office coordinator for marketing and switching the PowerPoint for us. Returning, Micah Hurst, residence director. You get one of those and another one comes back again. I think one's on sabbatical, right? The Hurst family remains. Dawn Lambert, instructor ADCP Lancaster, RN to BS. Returning, Andrew Miller, instructor of business and economics. Seth Miller, associate residence director. Nathan Musselman, Summer Peacebuilding Institute program assistant. Esther Shank Nafsager, admissions counselor. Marcia Pusey, instructor of nursing. Lynn Quay, office coordinator in the Science Center. Dorca Casare Ressler, director, international student services. Andy Richter, admissions counselor. Amy Schaefer, instructor in nursing. Ben Spots, head baseball coach. Catherine Stover, advancement and marketing associate in Lancaster. Lindsay Martin Steyer, assistant to director and office coordinator for the Center for Justice and Peacebuilding. Jeff Tyson, women's volleyball coach. Ruth Tyson, accounts receivable assistant. John Walbaum, assistant professor of mathematics. What a delight to welcome all of you. Reminder again, these are individuals who have joined us since last time we met in this way in August, and it's only those who have come to us, not someone who's just shifted from one department to the next. Would all of those who were pictured there please stand so we can see you and also welcome you. Ask that each of us take an opportunity to get to know these people on a better basis during the break time, etc. There's no sense in me reading what you have here about Ted. There's no sense in me trying to say much more than here's Ted, except I do want to just say a very public thank you from my heart, Ted, for asking the questions that I have always wanted to ask. Ted Swartz.
I would not have said that it was blasphemous. No, it just seemed like the right thing to do at the time. It was that pigeon, don't you know? Given the time of day, I wondered how he made it across the street in the first place. See, he wasn't flying. He was walking. It was a stroll. You see, a dignified jaunt across 42nd Street. He would have made it too, if it wasn't for that bicycle courier. Right up the side of traffic, he came right through the "Don't you dare do anything" sign, and he nailed that pigeon. Foo! Right in front of me. I looked down at that lifeless bundle of feathers, and I noticed that his wings were outstretched in death. So I picked him up, and I stretched him out, and I nailed him to the door of Sonny's Full Gospel Tabernacle and Shell Station. Just like this. Oh, I know what you're thinking. Just another crazy, strung-out loser. But I felt better. I felt much better.
Thank you. Thanks very much for this invitation to be here this morning on a talk about creativity. It's well on its way, I think, for a day that when we're supposed to be creative, asking me to come address the college and university faculty and staff is fairly creative. So, the piece I just performed was called I Felt Better. His character's name is Zeus. And he has been a part of my life for 20 years. The character is 20 years old, but he's also 55 years old. He's also 100 years old. He's also 400 years old, and he's also 2,500 years old. He was invented 20 years ago, but I'm 55. So then he is 55. But the modern theater is about 100 years old. Shakespeare, 400. Modern Greek theater is about 2,500 years old, so he is all of those ages. This art form was built on all of those that have gone before. To be creative means to participate in the stream of imagination and creativity that has been going on since the beginning that we heard already this morning. And how creative you are probably depends on how actively and deeply you choose to step in and get your feet wet or your bottom wet. Or your head wet. A friend of mine recently said that he was told that he was creative until he looked up the word creative and creation, and it means to create something out of nothing. And he said, only God can do that, so I'm not creative. I smacked him. Creation has been going on for a long time. We are, I believe, very truly co-creators with God in this divine process. And anytime something is reshaped, reimagined, reformed, happening in music and theater and writing and painting and institutional governance, creation is proceeding on its way and it is divine. That's why colleges and universities should probably be places of immense creativity, because the potential for imagination is a never-ending stream. Every year the soil is brand new. It's the process of creation that we are involved in and not the end result. So you need to step into the place in this stream where it fits you. I'm going to assume that since this is about creativity, you have no need to justify the value of art and creativity and imagination, but rather maybe we'll talk about how to best make that happen, or for me. A history of this character, Zeus. In 1991, I was at advanced acting class at James Madison. I was in my second year here at the seminary at EMS, midway through an MDiv, which was to become an MA because it appeared that Hebrew and systematic theology were going to interfere with my acting training. And burgeoning performance schedule. Cami St. Germain was an undergraduate at JMU, and she asked me to write her a monologue for this class. So I sat down and I wrote what became a stream of consciousness piece, the result of which became I Felt Better. What I started was that one line, it was that damn pigeon, don't you know? Sonny's shell station was up on 42. It's now a service station, but then it was a shell station and service station. And Sonny's shell just fits together. In the early 80s, I played county league softball, and Sonny Shell sponsored a team on that league with splashy green, white, brown uniforms, and several members of which were truly imposing behemoths. The most impressive was a man whose nickname was Butter. He was smooth. Sonny's Shell Station just had a nice flow. A year later, Lee Eshelman and I wrote our first full-length comedy show, and I took that monologue that I had given to Cammie, and I gave it to Zeus, the homeless man who seemed to have a peculiar and somewhat wise outlook on life. His voice was low and raspy, and the character seemed to walk out of that voice. Just doing it made my body change and allowed me to say things I otherwise would never do. Another sketch in that first show was inspired by a dream of Lee's and a line from a ZZ Top song. Have mercy, been waiting for the bus all day. The dream manifested itself in this way when Zeus said, have you ever seen a wasp battle a spider? Yeah, the wasp, he's in that web and he's just trying to get out. He's thrashing and thrashing. And thrashing, he's a black and yellow torpedo, and he can't, and the spider's coming closer and closer. Have you ever seen that? No? Boy, neither have I. I sure would like to, though. Over the years, Zeus has showed up from time to time, always with the hat, the long coat, and the fingerless gloves, once holding a sign that read, "We'll perform Eugene O'Neill for food." And another to answer the question, so you don't want my money? What do you want?
What do I want? What do I want? I want to dance.
And so they did. Flash forward to the year 2007, the year Lee passed away, and I was writing for a video project. The publishers wanted an interpretation of the book of Revelation, not the first three chapters, where the author writes to the churches and sounds somewhat coherent. Or, you've read the book. Or the second half, or that infamous chapters of apocalyptic destruction, but rather the whole book. And it would be good if it didn't run past 7 or 8 minutes. It was to be shot the first week of November. It was early October. There were also 40 minutes of other material to write. We, Lee and I, had had a meeting with the group in April with the writers of the curriculum. It really did, at that point, with those writers of the curriculum, feel like a shared imagination for the vision of the entire project. See, we were writing for three different shows. And our place in that vision, it was a chance to share in that setting our initial ideas, get responses, discern whether others in the room laughed at the appropriate places. However, we didn't have an idea for Revelation. 6 months later, the assignment was still clear. Revelation. Now without Lee. But it's also important to note that within the guidelines was only length and topic. So, where to start? First thing I did was I searched out someone smarter than I am. Someone who knew more about the subject of Revelation. I set up 2 sessions with Pastor Dwayne Yoder where we walked through the book. Well, walking doesn't really get at it, I suppose. We wandered, danced, and meandered our way around and through it. He said it's like an abstract painting. It can't be seen through the lens of representational art. You should look at it differently than perhaps any other text in the Bible. We tried to narrow the scope of the material, perhaps, remember, 7 to 8 minutes. I especially liked his comment, don't worry about that part, no one knows what that means. Then I could just draw a nice big line through that part. My first attempt was a sketch built around a film director directing a scene that would try to find the humor in the failing and fumblings of a hapless film crew. It wasn't very good. I'm not sure I ever finished it. So, it was now mid-October. I was disheartened, slumped in the middle chair of my writing nook in Plainwell, Michigan, at Shenandoah Playwrights Retreat overlooking Lake Doster. I had an assignment, I had a deadline, I had research, and a mediocre idea. I could feel myself wilting under the pressure of the deadline when Bob Small, who's the dramaturge I was working with, made a suggestion. See, a dramaturge, in the way I understand it, is somewhat as a midwife for the writing of a play. See, they cajole, they critique, and they occasionally suggest scenes, lines, and beats within the play. Yes, a midwife. And there's usually pain, sometimes blood, but there is a birth as well. So Bob said, read me a section of Revelation. And so I read for him from chapter 4. After this, I looked, and before me there was a door standing open in heaven. And the voice I heard first speaking to me was like a trumpet. And it said, come up here, and I will show you what will take place after this. At once I was in the Spirit, and there before me was a throne in heaven with someone sitting on it. And the one who sat there had the appearance of jasper and ruby. A rainbow that shone like an emerald circled the throne. And surrounding the throne were 24 other thrones, and seated on them were 24 elders. They were dressed in white and had crowns of gold on their heads. And from the throne came flashes of lightning, rumbling, and peals of thunder. In front of the throne, seven lamps were blazing. These are the seven spirits of God. And in front of the throne, there was what looked like a sea of glass, clear as crystal, in the center. Around the throne were four living creatures, and they were covered with eyes in front and in back. And the first living creature was like a lion, the second was like an ox, the third had a face like a man, and the fourth was a flying eagle. Each of the four living creatures had six wings and was covered with eyes around, even under its wings. And when I stopped, Bob said, sounds like something Zeus would say, or something Zeus would see. Aha! Aha! See, Bob knew Zeus. He had directed the first comedy show that Lee and I had done in 1992. When Zeus first emerged, he knew his voice and he knew his mind, such as it was. It was the suggestion that I needed. The lights were turned on and the piece seemed to roll out because the character seemed to know this material. It was a very odd and wonderful moment. Not all writing happens that way, by the way. Most of you know that. I now had a sketch, a monologue. Bob said it was a good start. However, it was too long. Not shaped succinctly. It didn't have what Bob could see as the five-part structure. You know, the beginning of the middle of the middle, the end of the middle, and the end. So I spent the better part of the day in the middle chair in the writing nook overlooking Lake Doster, rewriting John's vision as Zeus's vision. Now it was better. I had a script and an idea that there probably should be music woven throughout. It sounded like saxophone. So, first day of rehearsal, script in hand, saxophonist in the corner, I performed the first reading for the director. And her response was, it's too long. And right now, the most interesting person in the room is the saxophonist. But it could be good. It could be great. Aha. So a little bit more tweaking, and then to activate the scene, to give the character action and movement, to allow the body to speak as strongly as the voice. See, when a scene isn't working in theater, a good chance is, isn't working, a question to often ask is, what's the actor doing? What's the business for them? So their mind relaxes. Can they be filling a basket with apples? Can they be tying their shoes? Can they be shooting a basketball? Because when the mind is active, when the body is active, I'm sorry, the mind often goes to a creative state. For me, it's riding a bike, mowing the lawn, taking a walk. When we give the character something to do, props and specific movements, the mind engages in a way that it doesn't otherwise. So next, we work with a musician. We activate and work with a musician. See, it's a different art form, a different department, perhaps, we might say. Listening to each other, feeling each other, melding of forms, breathing together, filling the space with silence, Silences that are full when they are given the same attention as the sounds before and after them. So, assignment, deadline, expert, writing, direction, music, now repetition and memorization. God, I hate that part. It's drudgery, it's work, it's craft with just a little hint of art. But it's a necessary piece before we get to go back and play. And the last step is the audience. Piece is not complete. In many eyes, it's not even an art form fully developed until the audience hears it, sees it, feels it. And then they return the energy back to the performer, the last equation to complete the sacred cycle of performance art. So, to review. Assignment with implicit affirmation, freedom, deadline, research, writing, affirmation. Critique, a character developed 20 years ago, previously reintroduced. Writing, critique, writing, activation, edit, critique, affirmation. Melding of art forms, craft, honing, and the audience.
I found this book in the subway. Cover was torn off and most of the pages were missing. It was the book of Revelation, and it blew my mind. I know what you're thinking. What's left up there to blow? But you don't know everything. Yeah. Written by a man named John. John. Pretty sure I spent some time with him in detox. Six months or 5 years ago. Time runs together when you're having a good time. Yeah. In it, in the first part, he's talking to churches. Didn't sound like any of the churches that I've ever been to. Although I have been to Philadelphia. Maybe he's talking about the church, the kind of church that gives out a free meal on 42nd Street every Monday morning. But John didn't say nothing in his book about vegetable soup or peanut butter sandwiches. Although I suppose the lake of fire could be a metaphor for vegetable soup. I'm pretty sure I've had that soup a time or two. Yeah, mostly he's telling these churches there's some that they're doing good, there's some that they're doing bad, it's probably going to get worse, but hang in there. Yeah, and then that's about the time that the voices started. They're in my head. And this loud voice said, "The gates of heaven are open. Come on in." So I stepped into heaven. Things that I saw angels and scrolls, and I saw the lion that turned into the lamb and tore off all the seals, you see, the seals that released the horses of war, all different colors and all worse than the one before. It was war, and it was pandemonium. It was war, and everybody and his dog was running for cover. It was war. I wasn't sure when they wrote this book. It sounded like it could have been last week. And it was fire and hail and poison water and one lone eagle crying, "Doom! Doom! Doom!" And there was smoke. And out of that smoke there come locusts with tails like scorpions. And their job was to torture the people of Earth for 5 months. And about that time, a concert let out uptown. And the subway filled up. They was all coming in at once, pushing and shoving and jabbering and getting closer and tighter. They even sounded like locusts. I was pretty sure I was doomed. Then I held him off with the sword of truth. And when I opened my eyes, they were gone. Didn't seem like 5 months. Time runs together when you're having a good time. Yeah. And then the beast rose up. And with him, the false prophets. I'm not sure who the beast is, but I'm pretty sure I met him. And false prophets, we got all those we need. Hell, we elect most of them. See, there'll be marks on your hands directing what you do, and there'll be marks on your foreheads directing what you think. And there was music. Music. Harps. And 144,000 in the choir. Damn, that's a big choir. But the angels, they will hold judgment on those that follow the beast. But the saints, they stay true to Jesus. Jesus, I know him. We have coffee every Tuesday. Sometimes he buys, sometimes he lets me buy. And I saw a woman. She was dressed in sunlight. And she was ready to give birth, but the dragon, he was going to eat the child. He was going to eat the child. But then Michael, I got a cousin Michael, he's a dancer. Michael and the other angels, they fought the dragon. They fought the dragon and the battle was won. The battle is won. The battle is won. And I saw a new city. A holy city, a new Jerusalem. And this voice cried from heaven. God's home is with his people. He will dwell with them and make them his own. And there will be no more death, crying, suffering, or pain. Those things of the past are gone forever. Yeah. John, that sounds about right. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure that I am intellectually equipped to help a university become more imaginative, but I think there are connections and correlations perhaps that might be helpful to pull from this particular process that started with a pigeon and ended with Revelation. A small school like this, a school with Anabaptist Christian values, should be able to move nimbly to create an environment that honors the artistic, imaginative style of education within an institution. That long sentence means we should really be good at this. Theater, for me and many others, holds keys to understanding life. I sometimes say everything I learned about being real, I learned by pretending to be other people. I have other times in other circles talked about the three building blocks of acting. They are being present in the moment, listening, and empathy. For this morning, I'm going to add courage, humility, and vulnerability. And when these things all happen together with actors on stage, it's a moment of transcendence. Ron Marasco, in his book Notes to an Actor, says, people in other fields know this feeling as well. Athletes call it being in the zone. Jazz musicians call it being in the pocket. Religious people call it grace. And the great acting teacher Stanislavski called it the creative state. But you can't get to this zone, pocket, or grace by trying harder or pushing or study. You get there by being more honest in your work and in yourself.
In addition, what's interesting, theater has, and perhaps all performance art does as well, a built-in critique and response structure. As actors, we expect to be pushed, shaped, and made better. And when it's healthy, the relationship between actor, director, designer is transcendent. It is collaborative art. These five elements can also be building blocks, I think, to allow creativity to flourish here at EMU. Being present, listening, empathy, courage, humility, and vulnerability. It sort of is a given that we will think creatively. So how do we help each other stay in that state? So the outline for my process to create an 8-minute monologue. First was the assignment. Write and produce a video on a piece about Revelation. An assignment within a collaborative, imagined, well-articulated vision. We had sat in a room with 20 other people that said, this is what it'll be used for. Here's why. Here's what we want to say in this curriculum. So there was an imaginative vision to start with. I like to think of art sometimes can go into hibernation, especially theatrical art. See, it's alive in the minds of the writer, perhaps in the process, like I had just gone through with Revelation. It's perhaps produced, hopefully, and it's performed, and then it gets published, codified, and bound. Art then goes into hibernation until other directors, designers, and actors wake it up, make it their own, and deliver it again to an audience, and the art again flourishes. I have this vision of a shelf full of snoring art. That's what's terribly exciting about it. We get to wake it up. Every institution as well, I'm guessing, has had an imaginative vision. But the imagination of the vision can sometimes be buried in protocol and structure, driven into hibernation by committee meetings, pressure, and fear. The school values artistic expression, but is it always willing to wait for it? Because it's not always the most efficient way to do something. I think we all have memories of classes and projects when we were in school that stick in your mind, and think about what they are. Did they include your creativity? Did it include your imagination? Did it include your say in how it was structured? Perhaps occasionally the institution needs to pull the vision out periodically and ask the artists in the room to reinterpret it, smack it around, and wake it up. So, assignment. 2, freedom. There was freedom given after the assignment was given. And I think the tighter an assignment is held by the one giving it, the less likely art will happen. I was not told what this piece needed to be. There was very little governing to the assignments on the whole. There were some words I were not allowed to use, including the word foreskin. I don't know why. Incidentally, hooker was okay, but not foreskin. Incidentally, do you know why that was chosen? That the circumcision as the covenant symbol? My opinion is that in the male population, God wanted something that we would think about first thing in the morning. Which is, you get up, you wander outside of your tent, find a bush, and, oh, that's right, it's God. But I was not allowed to use that story. Sorry. 3, affirmation. When you're asked to do something in a creative state, there is an inherent, implicit affirmation in being assigned, of just being asked. What they're telling you is, you can do this. We are eager to see what you come up with. I almost wrote, we are anxious to see what you came up with. But I was just told over the weekend by a man with a PhD in English and education that the word is eager, not anxious, for this case. To be anxious and eager at the same time is, we're anxious to see what you come up with. We're really scared to death that you're going to come up with. Ken Napsinger is an example of someone who gives assignments with implicit affirmation and then just lets you do it. The piece I did this morning on the First Kings piece, thanks, Braden, for putting Second Kings in my head first. He didn't say what I should do with it. He never does. Fourth, courage. I don't usually like to describe what I do as courageous, but in fact, we are doing battle with fear constantly. If courage is what we use to describe this action, then so be it. It's a courage to start anything, courage to take a chance, and especially courage to look foolish. I believe possibly the greatest detriment to fear, to creativity, excuse me, is fear. Fifth, trust. Trust in vision, trust in the expert, trust in the dramaturge, trust in the director, trust in the musician, trust in the audience, trusting that they will go along with you. They will trust you in return. We can give assignments and we can encourage. If we don't trust, very little will happen creatively. Action. How is the body active? Where are the times when people are engaged in activities outside of academics, outside of theory, outside of walls and structure? Where is play? I have played softball for a church league team since I was 18. And while I have rapidly decreased in my ability to play, what I've learned is the affirmation for what happens sociologically, especially in a church setting. It's where you get to see someone outside of the walls, maybe see them for who they really are, for good and for bad. It's a place to do church without thinking about church. Recently, we were at a cleanup at someone from our congregation, cutting down and cutting up trees that were downed in the storm we had this summer. And there was a couple there who had been coming recently to church. And it was a chance for her, especially, to learn to know people outside of church by cutting wood with them, carrying things, sweating together. How is the body active? And five, is it fun? I'm sometimes... Actually, that's seven. Just testing. I'm sometimes asked what my hobbies are. And sometimes I will say it's sports or it's reading. But in truth, my job is just way too much fun. I really don't have any hobbies. Not every job can be like mine, and neither should it be, thank God. But if it's not fun, why not? Fun, like its siblings, comedy, humor, and laughter, and its step-sibling, clowning, and fourth cousin, twice removed, puns, are often, but not always, given second-class status in the educational system. This is very serious business. And often it is a business. And we also distrust little words, don't we? Fun. Doesn't seem like it's complicated enough. Just a short little word. Starts with F. F. Fun. It's like cute. It's a way to say something nice about something without really committing. Oh, that was cute. Wasn't that fun? Sometimes fun is not useful for those with initials before and after our names. Fun. But fun isn't always funny, is it? No. When my father and I were cutting meat together in the service meat counter and the customers were stacked up, when the hindquarters and the pork loins and the chicken breast need to be boned, 52 seconds, by the way, to bone a chicken breast. Each customer needed questions answered. No, you can't grill a chuck steak. Conversation was given. Service provided. It was a dance of shared space, slippery floors, and dead animals. Complicated with sharp knives and bandsaws. And when the rush was over, we would sometimes look at each other and say, that was fun. Fun can be funny, but it can also be the joy of getting work done well. And it better be fun around here, watching generations upon generations getting it. There's an energy revolving around a shared vision that can also be fun. And the last, I've forgotten which number it is collaboration. maybe the most important piece of all of this. And each one of these steps involves a social aspect. I'm a social writer. I'm an extrovert. I can't sit in a room without people, without someone to bounce ideas off of, gauge reactions, make people laugh. I'm engaged in a social public art, and the creation of that art needs to be imbued through its process with connection, conversation, and community. Alliteration is optional. All these steps involve people working together. Each one hopefully engages the five elements: being present, listening, empathy, courage, vulnerability, and humility. And each one addresses and celebrates the magic of making art together. And perhaps each one celebrates the magic of making school together. Thank you. We have a little bit of time that I was hoping that we would have for questions that you might have. Dave, I think you can moderate if you want. I can moderate. I can do two things at one time. I would be very happy to answer any questions that you might have. At the panel discussion a little bit later this morning, we'll have a chance to hear from other people and also ask questions about this process, but I'd like that panel discussion to be about those participants as much as possible. So if there are questions that you have about any part of this process that I talked about or how I would see creativity working, we can ask them now. We have about 8 minutes, I think.
How do you creatively get around writer's block or laughter's block or fun block? How do you, when you hit that wall, how do you get around it?
Writer's block, fun block, creative block. How do you get around it? That's also a question that will be answered in the panel discussion, so remember that as well. So, next! unfortunately, I need pressure, and I used to call it abusing the muse, which is flogging that little thing and that little gift that comes into your head occasionally, and sometimes by waiting too long. But I've gotten into a habit of pushing it and knowing something will happen, pushing it off until it the pressure builds up inside of me. The activity also works as well. Put it aside for a time, go away, come back. I think creativity is a combination of simply the hard work of writing every day, if you're a writer, creating music every day. Any writing book you ever pick up starts with that. You just got to write. Anne Lamott says you got to write, 20 pages of crap. It's far too precious for me, things that I write, to call them crap. But in one way, she's right. But the other is to put it aside, go away, and do something physical. Get your mind re-engaged by not trying so hard. That's what it works for me. My wife and I did three baccalaureates together at EMHS at Friday nights. The first one we wrote together, and she almost killed me. So then the second two, she just said, okay, I'm going to do my part, and it'll be done 3 weeks before, and it'll be succinct and well orchestrated and powerful. And then you do what you need to do. So. And when I've done wedding sermons, I usually don't finish till the night before because something great might happen that week. You don't know. But I don't advocate that entirely. Hey, Ken made a very interesting point. I wanted to make sure that I hit that, which is that creativity is not an excuse for not planning. So the structure of this, and anytime I've been given a biblical story to interpret, the structure is already there. The story is already there. I just get to get around and muck around with it. And that is a very valuable piece of the equation. So you don't go into a room and just say, okay, do whatever you want.
So I have a question about this balance between affirmation and critique and finding that with students. I think when we teach creatively and we affirm their ability to be creative, we also end up having to grade them eventually, right?
I mean, oh, that's right.
Oh, yes. Sadly. So also, how do you help people find an ability to accept that balance? I think we come to that with different life histories, and can't always hear the affirmation, or anyway, do you have secrets for that?
I think the old axioms are true. You have to give this amount of affirmation for someone to hear the critique piece of it. If in my sense is that when I hear critique best, it's when I need it the most. When I already know I need the critique the most is when I'm going to hear it best. Well, that makes a lot of sense. If I think it's really good and someone critiques me, then I'm going to hear it less. But if I know I need help, if they are present in the creation and the process of the creativity, then they're part of their critique as well. It would really be nice if we can, and perhaps it's happening all over, and I'm just out there by myself sometimes with this. I should probably talk more before I speak, but I'm going to do it anyway. Talk with people more. But it seems as if we're moving away from this idea that I have all the information and I'm the only one who can critique this to a class setting where there's a creativity critique. I think when we work through things collaboratively, then we can hear critique better. There's also a tremendous amount of fear for performers. That we're going to look stupid, so we need help. So that what helps us hear critique as well. If anyone else has any suggestions about that too, that's good. But I think involved in the process of creation and critique is helpful. And how great is their need to hear it? And also, it seems to me that we're also moving toward the grading of process. And I really did mean what I said, that it's a pretty messy process, and it's not going to have sometimes discernible endings. I wrote I forget what they were called, the classes when I was an undergrad, Ken, and you, Marge Maust and you and Jay Landis taught these mass classes of IDS, yeah, interdisciplinary studies, is that what it was? Look at that, I remembered that. And there was an assignment of to create a musical piece using found sounds or something like that. And I think I was the only one of the only ones, at least Marge says, the only ones that actually did the process, but it was creating a musical piece out of oven door slamming and teapots and things. Anyway, I've never forgotten that piece. I'm not quite sure why, but it was a creative leap into something else, and it was for a mass, one credit, everybody had to take it class. So, Ken.
You already mentioned the value of Zeus and the whole history of drama in getting across a message. When we think about education, we struggle with how to get the message across to our students, and we struggle in the church how to get a message across. My very first director of my psychology program left Princeton Seminary as he was about to get his degree, because he found out by preaching repeatedly every Sunday that he said he found out that his parishioners were learning more from movies than they were from him. Mm-hmm. And that really sent him into a tailspin, so he ended up in psychology, of all things. I don't know if that helped him or not, but he did fairly well in that area.
That's great.
But it goes back to that question of, as we're looking for ways to get the message across that we believe is important, how much do we take into consideration the medium that we use, and what does that say to us about our continued striving to be perhaps the sage on the stage versus the guide by the side, or do we need to be the actors in online media presentations that are going out to thousands of students everywhere, mm-hmm. which seems to be a pressure that we're getting from some to change how we do our craft, which is education.
Yeah.
So what can creativity and your direction say to us as educators?
Is this being handled in the afternoon? First of all, it's not surprising that people will learn more from movies than from a sermon if they're not recognizing the fact that that's what their competition is. Competition for sermons in the 40s, and that was the entertainment for so many people. And it's really changed in the way that society has changed and how we get information and how quickly we can get information and how entertaining it is. I like to think that authentic story told by someone in the same room with you is a lot better than anything else. But that's really hard to do day after day after day after day. I don't think that we all need to be entertainers or also be just people who find great YouTube things that try to say what we do. But it seems that we have to recognize the fact that we get information in an awful lot of ways now. And we have access very quickly in so many ways. And we would not do well by not being aware of that. I'm not answering your question very well, Ken. Let's bring that back into the panel and ask it again, because I don't think we've given it enough. Roman's right behind David.
I resonate with your comment about collaboration. In an institution like ours, we have lots of committees. And my question to you, how can committees become collaborators creatively as opposed to being the deadening of creativity?
We seem to have an opinion on committees. Have you been talking to Howard? Well, what makes a committee meeting fun? What makes it fun? Anybody? Telling a good story.
When there's a point.
When there's a point. I believe, Dr. Miller, I covered this in my first part when I said, it's a clear assignment. Why are we here? Yeah.
And also, when the committee is not bound.
Yes. Aha. So a committee meeting that doesn't start with the end, which is, you're just here to verify what I'm going to tell you. Isn't this a good idea? Just sign off, we'll have coffee in 40 minutes. Because we'll have to process it for a while. That's really interesting. If it isn't bound, so something may happen in the middle of it that changes what the direction of what you're going to do. I think Anabaptists and Mennonites in general do a really good job of giving lip service to the Spirit. But we have very bound ways to feel like it works. And one of the ways that the Spirit might be working is that your idea will change when you bring four people together. So maybe that's one way to do it. I think maybe that's the most important thing, is don't come bound, don't make it too long, and have a point. There you go. One last question. Thank you, Roman.
Ted, thanks for your presentation. I appreciated it a lot. I have one question that I think is important to a lot of us as teachers, thinking of teaching as a creative art. I heard you say a lot of things, but two of the things I heard most clearly were, one, that creativity takes a lot of work, that, you know, the 7 minutes of your Zeus doing Revelation took this incredibly long process of dedication and determination and planning and hard, tedious work. But then the other thing I heard you saying was, when you get in the zone or in the pocket, it means don't try so hard. And so I think as teachers, to teach a good course requires a heck of a lot of work. But if you try to control the class, can you talk a little bit more about how you negotiate those two things of planning really hard and then letting go in ways that might help those of us who have to do it in classrooms?
I think there's a significant difference in preparation and research and then when people come together to swap those molecules together. The best correlation I can have is that if you're in a play or a sketch or a scene, you need to really make sure you know your lines. You need to know what the character is doing and where and why. Once you step on the floor, That's a given. Now something else takes over. Something else takes over. And that taking over for me is the work is done. You can't get to here without the work. And after that, it's like a committee meeting. It needs to be unbound. I think that, well, maybe that's just it. I think that I usually come up with sports analogies for me are still useful. I was a baseball coach for many, many years and basketball as well. And I call it, you can't keep throwing fastballs. You got to throw a changeup, and that means not trying so hard, because the goal of the pitcher at the major league level especially is to offset the balance and timing of the batter, because everybody's going to hit the crap out of a 95-mile-an-hour fastball if that's all you throw. So you throw something else. But you can't get there without honing what that changeup is, that work is, that physical element, so that you get out there and not try so hard. The best times that when I appreciate, when I'm sitting underneath a teacher or so forth, when I feel their preparation, when I feel their study, when I feel their passion, and it's not a free-for-all in the class, but I feel the invitation to participate in the stream. Maybe I'm just saying the same thing again in a more poetic way. So maybe you're building the dock. I don't know what the metaphor is, but as a teacher, you're building the platform for them to step into that stream together. Is that helpful at all? Hey, what are you going to say? No? But it's a great question, Peter, and maybe the panel with smarter people will finish out that question, but I want to pick up Ken's as well for that time too. So I think we're at time.
Thank you.
I hope you, like me, were spending our time listening, but also generating numerous thoughts about how this applies and how this impacts and what I'm doing. And that's what we hope we'll be able to express more. So yes, you can always throw it to the afternoon. We'll cover that in the afternoon somewhere spread out there. Two items I wanted to mention that I failed to. One is that Ted's new book will be coming out, another expression of his creativity. Laughter is Sacred Space. That will be coming out in September. And what you see before you here, aiding in the visual, is the creativity of Brenda Fairweather, and we are deeply grateful for her willingness to share her gifts with us in creative arts in that way.